Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Gold podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jack Piattelli. Jack, how we doing?
Doing very well. Nice weekend, the Memorial Day weekend. Caught a lot of great lacrosse games, and the weather was beautiful, so no complaints at this end.
I mean, listen, a lot of people watch the game in their backyard on their phone. I might have been one of them, at least for D2 and D3, for sure, that was the case. But we brought in one of your good friends, Chris Cameron. He is the head coach at Bishop Gurdon, as well as the, I guess, creator, founder, inceptor of the New Hampshire Tomahawks.
Owner, director.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your title is, and it's just like everything. So I thought that was appropriate. A legend in New Hampshire lacrosse, has helped build the sport in my home state for over 20 years. It's incredible. So glad to have you in. You're a two-time guest, three-time guest? I wasn't here the last time.
Second time.
First time in studio.
Yep. Awesome to have you. And we're going to talk a little. Let's talk about the weekend as Jack set it up. So both your sons play Division I lacrosse, Sean at Princeton and Brian at Rutgers, formerly UNC. Your take on the semifinals first.
Yeah, so it was the first time, like, because Brian played in 21 and then both Brian and Sean played in 22. So this year, Princeton was this close. I mean, they were this close. They were playing hot at the right time. And they had the right draw because they Penn State and then it would have been Army. And then I think Duke was probably the best team to face out of the other than Virginia and Notre Dame. So I thought that the games on Saturday were outstanding. Obviously marred by Matt Palin, who's probably the best official out there right now. You'll see a lot of him this summer. And it was just one of those things. What's worse, to call a goal, to call back a goal that was a good goal, or to allow a goal that shouldn't have been a goal? So it was tough to go that way, but the games on Saturday were great. I mean, a lot of energy, high-level stuff, and it turns out everybody predicted the last three teams standing were Duke, Virginia, and Notre Dame, which was to be expected. And then the Monday game, the championship game, I would love it if they changed the format and just pushed it back a week or something like that, because the level of play for a championship game is not where it should be. Both teams seemed like on Saturday they were flying around. The energy was incredible, the athleticism, and it was just a slow paced game that didn't show the sport how high a level that it could be.
I still feel like it was an incredible game. I agree with that to a point, but I think that the tactical acumen, this might be just because I watch a ton of lacrosse and it's the highest level that I watch other than PLL, right? Is I'm always looking for what is the differentiator in this game. And for me, it was watching the rides and the ground ball play. I think that's what won the game. I think coaches say that all the time, right? Like, that was the thing that won you a national championship.
No, the goalie play was the difference.
Well, yeah,
I mean, sure. That was, if you flip goalies, Duke wins that game by five, six, seven goals. I mean, their goalie was close. I mean, he was having a nightmare of a day in the semis. I mean, he made five saves in a game like that. But to his credit, he finished with eight saves against Notre Dame, which he was better. But Eneman was just, I mean, he was just incredible.
17 saves.
17 saves. I think he had a 68% over the weekend. And to me, he got the most outstanding player, and it was well-deserved because Brandon O'Neill, he's worth the price of admission, but he scored two goals in the first quarter against Penn State, and then he had one in the second quarter, didn't score for a while, and then he had the one man up goal. So teams really did a good job. I think their attack of Dyson Williams, McAdory, and O'Neill, I think they were two. Williams had one, O'Neill had one. I think they were 2 for 22 shooting.
Yeah, they were shut out. They were shut out in the first half. Yeah. They didn't have 1 point amongst the three of them.
Nothing. And then Dyson Williams had the one goal where Chris Fake fell down and he slipped a pick. He scored that one, and then McAdory was, I think it was maybe an assist, but when you're starting attack, who's probably up there with Virginia, the best attack, you need to go 2 for 22. You're not going to win too many games because their midfield is not, it's not one of the top, it's not, it's a good midfield, but it's not a great midfield.
Right. I think Jack and I had a hot take. We were talking about Brandon O'Neill, and I think he's an incredible player, but my take on him is that he's better as an off-ball player than when he has the ball. Because, and one of the reasons I believe that is because of the championship game, Notre Dame pressed out on him and tried to make him beat them on places where he's not used to beating guys. When he gets ahead of steam, he's unstoppable. Don't get me wrong.
Right. So that's why he's better with the ball.
Exactly. He's better with the ball. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I think one of the things that Jack and I were talking about before we even started recording any of these podcasts was, if you can't get him the ball in a situation where he has a clean look, it limits what you get out of him. Just like, I mean, every player has their limitations. I think, like, one of the things that Jack and I lament all the time in this podcast, I'm sure you can relate to this, the highlightification of lacrosse is out of control, where you see guys just like, you got like hospital pass hits, you got like wild wind up shots. And really, like, the one of the best highlights of the championship game was the half field bar down goal is the greatest play I can remember. Like, I know it doesn't seem that way, but like, the courage to do that.
We saw so many open net goals this year.
I liked it because everyone 10 man.
But what's interesting, though, is Duke's not a 10-man team. Duke's very content on just give, they ride conservatively, give it up, and play 6-on-6 defense, which was surprising. I don't know if it was a 10-man or if he just
It was a 10-man. The goalie was out.
I don't know what he was doing.
Just surprised.
Yeah,
it was in the first half, right?
McCann was shooting that way. Yeah.
I think it was in the first half. Was. And I was like, it looked like a 10 ride to me. And I'm like, why are they in a 10 ride so early in the game?
Usually they don't.
I mean, they were down 6-1.
I mean, some teams
still
do it every game.
Virginia is very effective at it. UNC is very effective at it with the teams that they're far superior to athletically. When they beat up those teams like Providence and Mercer, it works, but it doesn't work for them in the ACC because teams match their athleticism. So, I mean, the 10-man with the amount of goals that we've seen this year, either goalie goals or BU's known for their 10-man, it just doesn't...
Do you not like that? It sounds like you don't like it.
Oh, I'm a big 10-man guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm a huge 10-man guy, like, not this year, though, because I'm not as athletic in the back as you need to be.
Right.
You have to be very athletic to go 10-man, but to me, the percentages just don't add up with the amount of goals that are being given up by it.
Right. So. It's not just because the other thing, too, like, we're going to get into the weeds on this, is, like, the turnovers, right? Like, I was looking at turnover numbers. There's no way they're right for the champ game. I was watching that champ game, and it's, like, one turnover for, like, each guy. I'm like, that's not true. I watched this game. Like, I feel like they're just not. It's a stat that, like, doesn't get taken correctly.
Turnovers or fail clears?
Turnovers.
Okay.
I don't like that it's done that way. I like, it looks, because they're not even caught. They're doing, like, they're giving the team the turnover.
With the shot clock when you have the ball?
I hate that. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You look at the kid from Penn State, Malone. He had almost 40 turnovers. He was a great player. He was Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year. But certain teams will allow that. You need that. If you can make it up with saves and faceoffs, you can have high turnover guys. That, to me, that's a very important number. I mean, turnovers has been our focus this year.
It's huge, right?
But I think eventually it's going to bite you in the ass. I really do.
They always get you. Yeah, they do. But
well, let's talk about your season at BG. Incredible. I mean, undefeated in the state for sure. Very little. I mean, in the way of competition, I think, like, you guys have established yourselves as the program in the entire state. Just like, especially in your division, Division One. New Hampshire has three divisions. For people that are listening that aren't super familiar, it's Division One is the larger schools. It's all done by population, or if you petition up. So yours is not necessarily from population. It's petitioning
we
up.
We petition up, yeah.
Just like Derryfield petitioned up as well in Division Two. So you have certain schools that have this, like, culture. And one of the things we talked about in a previous podcast is the difference between having a team and having a program. And I think one of the things that BG did, it was one of the first programs, other than, I think, I would say Pinkerton, to make a program. Instead of just having a team, because there are, as much as players, Massachusetts has so many players. Massachusetts has more players than any other state in the country, okay, in terms of high school and youth and all participants. New Hampshire doesn't, but it's still one of the most populous in terms of the rest of New England states other than Connecticut. So a ton of, it's growing every single season. There's more players playing because there's more people moving to the state. The state's population overall is rising, right?
Yeah, I mean, so when I took over in 2000, and my first year at BG was 2004. I did one year at Trinity in 2003. We had 31 players in the program. The head coach before me was James Riley, who James is one of the top referees in the country now. He's doing
one of my good friends, Coach Emerson, with him.
He's done
at Brewster.
He's at Brewster now. Yeah, he's done Final Four games. So one, we just had to build the numbers. So I was a volunteer freshman basketball coach, because to me, the best athletes are basketball players. So I recruited basketball players, and out of the seven that I recruited to play, six played all the way through, four of them went on to play college. Now the skill level's too high. If you went and recruited these kids, they'd be too intimidated and too far behind. It's just because the skill, it's just gone. The kids are playing so much younger, and it's tough to do that. It used to be an athlete, you could come in and play.
Yeah.
And then my AD, Tony Johnson, in 2000, and I think it was like 9 or 10, came to me and said, Chris, we want to have a spring sport that's no cut. And I looked at him like, oh man, this is going to be a challenge. And the first player that ever took advantage of that was a kid, Kyle Carrasco. He wound up being a 4-year starter at UMass on defense, 2-time All New England, because it's better that the kids are out playing lacrosse than staying home playing video games. So yes, Kyle, it's a program now where we had 95 kids come out this year. I knew, because being around Tomahawks and running an indoor league, the level of play of each team. So I took a 55 player roster this year, because the drop off after the top six was dramatic. And you have some teams in Division II where you have Derryfield, you have Portsmouth, even Timberlane. Those three teams would all be top five and top six in Division I. But after, like, Bedford is 4, Merrimack is a 5, but they're not really a true 5 because they played a really weak schedule. They played South twice, they played Nashua North, Nashua South twice, and then right. Londonderry 6. But after that, I mean, it dropped, like, Concord, when you were around for you, Concord won state championships, and they were a program, they were deep. But there's a lot of, like, I don't want to say the growth in New Hampshire is going down, but there's not as much depth or as parity as it used to be for right now.
Well, why do you think that is?
I think some club programs, they have a lot of prep school coaches, and they try to just take those kids to the prep school programs. We don't for the Tomahawks. We only have one, Ryan Henry from New Hampton's the only prep school coach that we have, because we want to keep these kids playing in New Hampshire. I that could be part of it. I just don't know numbers. Why I don't know what the numbers are, but you would know. Division III this year, you'd see, like, Bo, it was undefeated.
Yep.
And that was kind of the role you guys were usually in, that undefeated team. Deacon's got a, you guys have a program up there, but Bo's undefeated. But I think that you're going to see the chalk's not going to hold in Division III. I think there's a lot of teams like you and Campbell and Plymouth and Pelham that can challenge. There's depth there. In Division I, it's BG, then a distance between Exeter, Pinkerton, and Bedford.
Right.
Division II, you have...
It's like Derryfield and Portsmouth.
Derryfield and Portsmouth, where Derryfield beat Timberlane 17-2. And that's who they're going to face in the semifinals. That could have been a perfect storm day, where I don't think you're going to see that happen again, because I think Timberlane gave Portsmouth a pretty good game. And then you have Wyndham in the mix, Hollis in the mix, St. Thomas in the mix. So there's more depth there, but I don't think any of those teams can play with the Derryfield and the Portsmouth.
Yeah, it's interesting. The breakdown of Division 1, 2, and 3 in New Hampshire, now that this is my third year in Hopkinton, and coaching in it, it's a lot of it is athleticism, as opposed to pushing, like, skill is obviously the thing that wins you games. You have a goal scorer, you got a goalie, you got a faceoff guy. You have a chance to beat anybody, right? But as you advance to Division II, you need more depth. You need a takeaway defender. You need all these things that you need at higher levels. And I think, like, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is when you're kind of building out roles for your team, how do you identify where they're going to play and what role they're going to play for you? And when do you start doing that in terms of when you see them when they first come in?
That's on a few different levels. So last year, J.J. Murphy, who was a face-off kid at Bryant, he faced off at about literally 90%, I mean, all year, because a lot of those were skewed. But in our six out-of-state games, he was still north of 70%. And he came to me and says, Coach, I'm the only face-off guy around. I need someone to work with. So that was an area where then he went and grabbed this kid, Noah Zeman, who's going to go to Riviere. And we call it Boomer's Face-Off Academy, where he worked with him every day and he developed him. So you kind of see, like, I have a very, like, our Tomahawks 26 Purple team is very, very good. And I have about 8 or 9 of those kids. So I know that I have a good freshman class. But defensively is right now a weakness I see, like, depth-wise. So I'm trying to talk to a few of the athletes about flipping them from midfield to defense. So you kind of see, like, I know that I'm going to have midfield and goalies this year. I have four goalies on my roster, so I know that that's not a problem. Right. I have a Division I kid, Zach Connerty, going to VMI. Will Murphy going to Bryant. Liam O'Keefe, who's one of the top 25 goalies in the country, and you guys had Rich McDonough on not too long ago. Michael is not one of our starters, but he's probably a recruitable goalie this summer. Maybe not D1, but he's. So you kind of see what's there, and your kids ultimately playing time wins out. Kids want to get on the field.
Right.
So you have to be honest with them and say, your best chance. You don't move kids around based on straight needs at the high school level. College level, you get there. Like, there's a kid, Donovan, the LSM for Notre Dame, who played great. They said he was a short stick, and they put a pole in his hand first day. You don't really do that at the high school level. You do what's best for the kid, as long as you're honest with them and say, look, your best chance to not only play for BG, but also to get recruited, because all these kids that play for us, they have aspirations of playing in college. When I say all, I would say 48 or 50 of the 55 kids want to play college across. So this is your best chance in this position.
Yeah, that's a great point that you made, was you do what's best for the kid in high school. Mm-hmm. In college, you're doing what's best for the team.
For the team, right.
Right? You know, it is.
That's because, true, yeah.
But when you get to that level, like the Notre Dame level, a lot of those guys could probably play a number of different positions to some degree.
To some degree, yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
So let me ask you how Tomahawks works into not your program, but how it works into your schedule, right? Like, how does that work for you as a coach? Because I know, like, we're leaving one season, and then we're going, this is what other people don't understand, we're going straight into summer.
Absolutely.
We're like, there's no break. Like, Memorial Day was nice, everyone. We also work that weekend, but you're going straight into something else. I mean, I'm going to cover things straight into it. So how does that work for you? What is your break? Do you get one?
So no, I mean, yeah. It used to be fall lacrosse was just a time where I wouldn't even have a program for the Tomahawks, but as Jack, that it was at a demand. People, like, the kids wanted it because a lot less kids are playing football, and then the parents wanted it, so we added it, and then it went full blown, where there's almost as much recruiting in the fall as there is in the summer. But so that's why there's no break. But so the state championship, if we're fortunate enough to make it, would be 18 in a row for us at BG, is June 11th. Mm-hmm. And then June 12th, we start practices. And then the first tournament for these kids is June 17th and 18th. Our purple teams, our top teams, are playing at the primetime invitational run by Nick Daniello at Yale. Mm-hmm. And then the gold teams are playing at the primetime shootout run by the Penguins in the Babson-Wellesley area. Yep. So it goes, you go from finishing that right into the club season. We don't do anything with the high school kids during the spring.
Right. Well, you can't. It's a rule.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't miss anything for the club.
Right. Exactly.
You can't miss anything
for the school.
For the school. Because then you have some, whether it's a 2-week suspension.
We get told that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know why. We have like four kids that play club. Why are you telling? It's actually because we have hockey kids. The hockey kids is the key
hockey's
one.
The issue.
Because there is an overlap.
There's an overlap. And then it's a once in a lifetime. We qualified for the national championships every year. I hear that.
I heard it this year. I heard
it. It's like every year there's like two teams from New Hampshire make it. So that's something that Bedford had problems with, because Bedford, some kids chose to go to that and they missed the first week of the season and then they got suspended. My kids know that you don't do that because you're not done. Just hand your stuff in. I mean, that's part of a program. So it's a quick transition. But for the most part, during Tomahawks, during the high school season, is we practice Friday nights, and then we have weekend tournaments. So it's not a weekend, not tournaments, but the PYLL that we are now.
Well,
so,
there is a lot of tournaments during the week this year, I noticed. There's like a fair amount of tournaments, like Tuesday, Wednesday.
For club?
Yeah.
Legacy.
During the summer, you're saying?
During the summer.
Oh, yeah, which is good and bad. It's good from the standpoint where you reduce the competition for college coaches to be there.
Sure.
So if they don't have other events to go to, this is where they're going to be.
Right.
But it's tough sometimes for the parents to – when you're going to Devon's, it's easy for you to get there and because the kids can drive themselves. It's not mm-hmm. But when we play – Tom Zumo runs the Long Island Showdown down at Central Ice of New York, and it's a great event, but it's tough. It's on a Tuesday, Wednesday. Parents have to take off from work. So we try to reduce those as much as possible because it is a burden on the parents and work. So
where do you stand on – so I have a bunch of kids that aren't going to make top-level club teams, but they do training with different club teams, Tomahawks included, obviously. And they always ask me, like, Coach, what do you think about showcases? And I was like, well, if that's your loan option, like, you need to exercise that. You need to be in that. Find ones that fit your need and your cost and all that stuff, and try to be seen as much as you can. What are your thoughts on that? Because as like a high school coach, like, I know that you're not, I know where every single kid can go. Okay. I know your ceiling. It's kind of like my job to know that. Right. And my experience is such that I know I don't have D1 players. Right. But I also know that kids want to play in college. And while there's less programs that there used to be, there's still a place for kids that really want to play, but you have to get the access to it. And I think showcases and prospect days have become kind of this weird bugaboo in the recruiting landscape. You know, you're both club coaches, right? Like, yeah, sometimes some club coaches hate them. Some are inside of it. I'm just curious where you guys stand.
So it's a loaded question, but a good question. So from the standpoint, like, up until November, December, my phone's ringing from college coaches that were looking for 23s. They want to fill their rosters. So there's a place for every kid in our program to play college lacrosse if they want to. You know, there's a come to Jesus talk at some point when September 1 comes along and you think you were going Ivy or ACC or Big right. 10. That's not there, and you got to readjust. But there is a place. If you want to be on a roster and you want to have that experience of being a student athlete, there's a place for everybody to play. As far as showcases, they're hit or miss. They're hit or miss. Some are very well done. When you cross the border into Massachusetts, you know, the prices go up significantly because you know the demographics in Hampshire are different than the Massachusetts. So there was a showcase. I could give it up. Matt Chandick runs 1%.
Yep.
And he does media for NLF, and he does a great job. I mean, he does a great job promoting it, and he gets the top kids. And so I gave him three of my top 27s to go to. And without really, I knew, at first I looked to make sure the date didn't interfere, because I don't want them, you can't go to showcases and miss team events. But so with the parent that called me up, the price of the showcase for a one-day showcase was over $500.
Yeah,
so
that's
crazy. You have to be selective. And I always add, when people do go to showcases, I make sure I get feedback from the player and the parents so we could pass it on to the next person to say. But one of the biggest mistakes that kids make is that more is not better. Mm-hmm. Less is more.
Where, no question.
Because these kids, we do five tournaments if you're on a purple team, four on a gold team, which is all the exposure you need. You do not need to do anything else. You will get seen by hundreds of college coaches during. Save something for whether you do the New Balance All-American Games or if you do a prospect day, because some coaches are going to have a list of kids that they saw and they're going to want to have come to their prospect day. Some of them are just, they get the coach's book and they just eat, they mass mail it
shotgun.
Out and say,
you call it shotgun.
My wife Judy gets invited to some of the girls' showcases, you know, because her name's on there. And so that you got to determine which ones are real, which ones are not. But whether you play for Piatelli, you play for Tomahawks, you don't need more, but sometimes you could pick and choose one or two more. But the kids that do too much are not the same player they are in June as they are in July, because they're completely burnt out.
The other thing, to Chris's point, is they're better off playing on their team in that element, environment, in front of the coaches, than going to a showcase. Because when you go to a showcase, you're one of whatever, 100, 200, you don't know what team you're playing on, you don't know who you're with, you don't know how many touches you're going to get. There are a lot of questions unanswered. There are so many things you don't know going into a showcase. Smaller is better. Mm-hmm. Going to a Providence College has a small recruiting camp. They only allow 50 kids. They might have five sessions of 50, but go where you actually will be seen, and you get an opportunity to be coached by the coaches.
Right.
There's one down in Philly. My son John went a number of years ago. There were 1,000 kids.
Yeah.
There were 150 coaches, but there's 1,000 kids. Do the math, do the ratio,
and
right?
He's one of the ones that could stand out. Yeah.
And so I don't highly recommend that one to my, because the chance of being seen, it's just too many.
Yeah,
and you know what? You want to continue to develop and become a better player. You're not going to develop going to a bunch of showcases.
I think what I'm asking that. So again, you're right. It was a loaded question because I'm asking it from my point of view. So I have kids that are maybe D3 players, and I have one kid who is a D2 player. I knew he was, and I went, okay, he's like, coach, you think I should play Tomahawks? I'm like, you need to go play at a high level. Yes, you should go to Tomahawks. And this is Steven Reddy. Great kid. Love him to death. Converted football player, right? Doesn't have maybe the refined stick skills of someone that's a Division I player in New Hampshire, right? Verrett, just a crazy athlete. And no one had seen him play because we don't have film because we are in the sticks. Like, we have other people's film. We had the championship game film. So I sent that to, he played in one of your events. So I'm sure Coach Smith called you about him and yes. He called me and I went, here's the tape of us playing in the champ game. You can, I let you guess which number he is. Right. And he's like, is he number 8? And I was like, yes. And I was like, that's the guy you want. Right. Like, that's who you want. And he's like, well, I think we can make something work with him. And we went through stuff and I talked to Steven and Steven's getting all these offers from D3 places that he's also very smart. So the high academic, I have to match my kid with the school. I feel like that's my job. I know there are some high school people don't do that. They leave that to the club guys and they should, because you guys have tons of contacts. But I'm one of the rare exceptions where I know everybody. So I can help you get to the place where you should be, I think, for your academic and athletic level. And I think St. Mike's might be a little bit of a reach for him, but I think that's good for him, right? And I told him that. Oh, and yeah. I think that's the way that he did that is he went to a prospect camp. He went to Williams Prospect. And he's like, coach, I got invited to go to this. Should I go? I was like, is it Williams? He's like, yeah. He's like, where is that? Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Like,
so 2 points to that is that, I mean, it's great when you get to say you have a kid going Ivy or Big Ten.
Sure.
But the match, because as we mentioned earlier, playing time always wins out. You want to find kids in the right, get the right fit, because you don't want to be dealing with the portal.
No, not at all.
I have like 8 kids I'm dealing with right now in portal. Some of them are taking 5th years. And the other thing with that prospect day that you talked about is that if you go to a prospect day that has only, say it's Providence there, you're not getting the bang for your buck. You want to go to a prospect day where they invite 10 or 12 other schools. Right. These coaches are now smart where an Ivy League school is going to invite all the NESCACs or all the Patriot, because that's where you're going to get, because not everyone can go to an Ivy school.
Right.
So you want to get your bang for your buck there. And then the other thing that Jack mentioned is that if you're an attackman and you're on a, these prospect days are not really teaching events. They're just kind of the break up in the teams and you play. And say you're an attackman, and two things. One is you have a face-off kid that can't win a face-off. Or sometimes you don't even have a face-off guy.
Sometimes there are 7 attackmen on the team.
Yeah. Sure.
And there's 5 lefties and 2 righties. Right. Or the middies never pass the ball. And the poor goalies are seeing, at those things, they're seeing 5-yard shots instead of 12-yard shots that you want to see. So they're hit or miss. So I think we've...
And I'm also looking at it as a evaluator, right? So I'm there for... I'm writing guys up that play well. If you look exactly like the other guy on your team and have a similar number... maybe that gets messed up. So if you all play the same position, that's tough. Because like sometimes, I mean, not again, this is, I'm going on too many rants here, but I feel like there has to be some sort of breakdown of these events that makes sense for everyone that is recruiting and attending them and trying to identify the top talent. And I feel like this is my 3rd summer. I've done some stuff with Inside Lacrosse before, but let's just say it's my 3rd summer covering the recruiting beat in New England, right? I know that I have to go to Legacy. I know that I should go to Primetime. I know that there are all these other tournaments that I should go to. And the ones in New England, I feel, are huge. Or
huge for what?
Super small. No, numbers. So there's big numbers and little numbers. And the hard part is picking, the big numbers are easy. Listen, Legacy's a monster. I have to go there. It's great. And I get tons of content out of it. I'm very thankful. The rest of them is like handpicking from, this could be good, this could be bad. I'm not going to name any tournaments that I went to that were bad, but I did go to tournaments that I was like, this talent level is not, this is hard for me to do, because I know that you're only like, there are kids at this event that just aren't going to get recruited.
Well, yeah, Jack and I, we talk all the time about events. I mean, because selecting the right event for your program is so important.
Right.
You got to select the right event for the level of your team.
So that's my leading question. How do you do that?
Experience. One of my rules is I don't go to first year events. I might get burnt every now and then.
First year events
it could blow up on you. To me, you want to be good competition, but you want to go where the coaches go. And then the coaches are going to go where the best players are. So that's what we have down right now, is that we know where the coaches are going to be.
Right.
And then we're not going to send our goal teams to playing the Long Island Showdown or playing NAL, they're going to get killed. Yeah,
right.
It's great. Yeah, you know, 180 coaches there, but we lost. So you got to send them to the right levels, and then also the right level of coaches that are going to be there. It's great that you want to make sure that the NESCACs, or whether, you know, the local, it's Clark or Emerson. Sure. Or, you know, yeah. So you got to find the right level where the coaches are.
And Chris has his purple teams, which is his top team. Yep. And then he has his gold team, which is the next level team.
Yeah.
But that gold team is a very good team if placed in the right tournament. Yeah. And those single A, we call them single A players, there's a number of them playing everywhere.
Yeah.
All very good Division II and III programs all over the country. So, and yeah. Again, it's, and Chris agrees with me in terms of, yeah, it's great to win. It's very difficult to win a high school tournament. We yep. both won some tournaments over the years, but we want to be able to compete. At the end right. of the day, we, if it's 11-9, 13-10, yeah. we want to be able to compete. Yeah. And because the coaches don't give a darn about yeah. the score.
You don't want to win 18-1 either.
Because no, you
then,
don't.
Then your defense, then you don't learn, and your goalie, then your yeah. your defense and goalies don't get yeah,
exactly.
You yeah, want to have a great you want to have an up and down game where everybody's getting touches, everyone's getting seen.
So placement is so important, and that just yeah. comes down with experience.
Yeah, and listen, like I said, it's my third year. I'm hitting the stride with what I think is should be covered and which club teams I think not.
Jack,
no offense.
And we know them all. You
I
ask,
know.
You
know. No offense we'll to any other club teams. There are yeah. some club teams where I've watched and I'm just like, I can't do anything with this, because if I write something about it, it's disingenuous, right? Like my thing that I try to do here that is different from what you guys are doing is I'm very positive. Not that you aren't. I'm saying I'm only focusing on what this player does well, and I'm writing that. And then they get the attention from it. They're great. They're happy about it. But I don't make stuff up about people that I watch. Like, if you have like three or four good plays and you do the things that I think you should do to be recruited, I will write you up. But I can't do it for every single player. So, like, I get comments. I'm sure you guys get them too. Like, you missed this, or you didn't do this, or how is this person not playing? And I'm like,
yeah, but you
I
know,
don't.
You
I don't
just,
do
you,
that.
You can only control yeah. what you can control.
Right.
And what I'd like to say is Chris Cameron's been in this business longer than most anybody in the whole country. And sure. Chris, I actually formed my club program around his format. His format is the same as mine in terms of team. They play as teams, they practice as teams, they mm-hmm. compete as teams, and that's why he's had so much success with his program. He doesn't switch his teams up or play kids down, or he does a great job with his players and his program, the girls program.
Yeah.
Chris knows every single coach in America. He's well respected in the industry, but
you're talking to me like I'm not from New Hampshire.
But I'm just saying, I mean, I know a lot of coaches, know a lot of things, but this guy, he's been around doing it a lot longer than I have, and he's been a great.
Well, a lot of the guys we play with in the Blazers or in the club team are now are the college coaches out there. So
I think that helps. My whole thing is, like, I'm a D3 guy. Right. I coach D2 as well. I just don't happen to coach kids right now that are D1 players and maybe the occasional D2. And my whole thing is, like, I just always want to get everybody to have a good experience. And I think that, not that there's any knocks on specific club programs, but I think that sometimes people join a club program, they just think I'm going to go D1. And I know that doesn't necessarily yeah. happen all the time, but there are people that happens with, and like, I want to know, like, how do you kind of confront that? When do you confront that? Is that an immediate thing? Well, or?
So, you know, the other thing, when people join a club program, they think they're going to start winning games right away, and they care. So the expectations that we set with our coaches, like,
right.
we're not playing a win. We're playing equal playing time, get everybody exposure. And right. at the younger level, we don't have starters. You want to develop players so that you can develop them and showcase them for high school and college lacrosse. But sorry, I lost. What was the question? I lost my.
I'm just trying to when do you?
Oh, yeah. So when do you set the expectations about?
Yes.
So there's nothing wrong with working hard to get to whether you want to play high level Division I lacrosse.
Right.
You say, let's go for it. We're not going to be the one you know, what we can't talk, Jack and I can't talk college coaches into a kid at the Division I level.
Well, you can't. You lose your credibility if you do that.
You have you to be completely honest.
Yeah. I think people don't understand that. So,
but at the Division II and III level, you mentioned two and three are very similar to
yes.
each other.
Yes.
But a lot of times coaches are looking for kids, and you can say, look, this kid would be a great fit for your program. Mm-hmm. But Division I coaches, our job is to get them, to develop them so they're playing at a high level, and their skill set, teamwork, to compete level, and then
get them in front of the coaches.
That's right. What our job is. And then when the phone call comes, hey, this kid stood out to me. Keegan really stood out to me. What's he like as a kid?
Right.
What's he like as a student? What's his financial situation? Sure. How do his teammates like him? What's the family situation? That's what we can talk about that,
yeah.
which is very important for leadership and character is so important that coaches really want to do that. But we talked more about 9-1 is when the juniors can be recruited. So we're okay with kids shooting a little bit high. But if the truth always comes out. So some club programs will say, oh, if you come play for me, I'll get you to an Ivy school.
Right.
It's not true. No matter what, the truth always comes out. So you have to be honest with your players, honest with your families as to what level. But hey, let's go for it. But come 9-1 and not hearing from those schools, then you got to say, you know what? Let's readjust your list a little bit.
Right.
Let's give it another shot. And then if you have the fall, if it doesn't work. And then in the summer, you could adjust it.
Yeah, and the things that have changed, too, dramatically, and Chris can talk about this, is parents are getting too involved in the recruiting process,
yeah.
right? I get emails from parents, oh, Johnny can't get into this showcase. Can you see if you can get him in? Okay, the kid's a junior in high school. Why isn't he emailing me and asking me, or why isn't he emailing the guy, right? That's part of the problem. But we're not a recruiting service. We develop lacrosse players.
Right.
We create an environment that's fun and competitive. And if you want to work hard and develop as a player, you're going to have an opportunity to play in college.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
You gotta be. And then you can get involved when it comes for the admissions piece and the offer piece.
Right.
You know that's where we add our
and the thing that Chris has. I mean, Chris played at Lehigh, was
all-time leading scorer.
Was how many time All-American?
One
time All-American, but he went through it with his daughter, who ended up at Northwestern, son Brian, who went to North Carolina, then went to Rutgers, had a great career at Rutgers, and now his son Sean, who had a great season at Princeton. So he's been through it all, three different schools, girls, Big Ten, ACC, mm-hmm. Ivy League. So again, he's lived through it as a parent, so there's not much he doesn't know.
It's changed, too, because both Brian and Sean committed as eighth graders to their...
Right.
Kristen didn't. Maybe she was a sophomore, I think. But, you know, now I think it's good for everybody that the early recruiters...
It is better, right?
Oh, it's so much better. It's so much better. I mean, you're going to see... It hurts... The top teams favors them because they have more data to see these kids play for two more years where they're not making decisions as eighth or ninth graders. So Lars Tiffany and Joe Bresci and John Tillman get to see these kids for two more years, so that means they're going to make less mistakes.
Yeah.
There was so many mistakes being made. That's why you saw the Loyola win a national championship,
right.
Because they were just making the right decisions on a lot of guys.
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, it's interesting. I actually had a conversation with a Division I coach that I'll just have him remain nameless, and I was talking about writing kids up and having to get things right on my end, and he goes, Kyle, if you're wrong, no one... It's not your job. He's like, if I'm wrong, I don't have a job anymore. And that's like a big part. I never thought about it that way. Because that's how integral recruiting is to success as a college coach. Like if you don't have a good recruiting foundation as a college coach, you probably don't have a good foundation regardless of your status, your school, your program, whatever it is. If you don't have a good recruiting plan, you're not in a good place. And that's why when new coaches get hired and things like that, I talked to a couple of people there's a couple jobs open right now, especially I'll say it. I think EastCon is open right now. And I had a couple of people text me to D3 school and they're like, what do you think about this? I'm like, I get support. If they have support, you should, it was a person that was ready to take that move. And I was like, you should do that. You should apply every single time. Like that's a thing that you should go after. And I took for granted as someone in media that the write-up of a kid is actually can be a huge part of how they get seen, not recruited, seen first. And that's something that I take it very seriously.
Take it seriously, right. Yeah. Some people, oh my God, my kid didn't get written up. What's wrong with it? So, But yeah, it's so recruiting. You got to have some people call me up. How'd you guys beat BC High, the number 14 team in the country? I got really good players. I mean, so you can't win no matter.
Oh, what I got level. That. I got those texts right. too.
No matter what, no matter what level you're at. I mean, yeah. Look at the players that Virginia's got. I mean, they got guys for days.
Yeah.
And any of those levels, you got to have good players, and that means at the high school level, I can't recruit, but you have a program. Kids want to come play that program because they want to play BC High and they want to play St. John's Prep, they want to play Acton-Boxborough. So that's our edge, is that you want to be part of that. But at the college level, everybody has a different angle. Like Rutgers with Coach Brecker, you had on the show, right? Because he's a Springfield guy. He was very effective with the portal. I mean, that was his advantage. And you look now, the Ivies are at a major disadvantage right now because all these fifth year kids. You look at Yale, right. Like Chris Fake, who was a big part of that game, mm-hmm. was able
Tevlin.
To. Tevlin yeah. had a. He didn't do much in the first game, but he had the OT winner. But those guys play with Yale, and now those Ivy guys, they can't get fifth years at Ivies, but they're going to the ACCs and the Big Ten.
But that's the compliment I was trying to pay you when you came on, and you kind of dismissed it a little bit, is that before Tomahawks, no one knew anything about New Hampshire lacrosse. There weren't that many people being developed here. I lived here. I went through it. I was lucky to go get a sniff from Keene State. If I played at John Stark, well, like that's a thing that happens.
So when Jack and I played in the Blazers in the early mid '90s, so I called up some of my my first year at Trinity, I got some better players than I thought. So I called up a few college coaches. No one's coming to see them play,
right?
No one, like very few coaches even come. But we played Acton college season. We played them on Thursday. College seasons are done. Steve Moreland from BU was there. Kevin Gould from Roger Williams. So we had like a dozen coaches because their seasons are done. But no one was coming to see Division III. I think it was three at the time. No one's coming to see those kids. So
yeah.
I'm like, Coach, I got some really good guys. And like, I can't come up there. You gotta send them. And that's when I learned about the club world back in 2003. Right. I'm like, I got to do something for these kids. And I started with one team. I mean, it was basically one team to get kids from New Hampshire recruited. I didn't have the vision of adding. And now we have. We have pre-K going right now.
Right, right. Girls, so you have pre-K all the way up to junior high school. Talk a little bit about your boys and girls program.
So the girls program, Mandy Rogers, we added that in 2014. Sometimes you make good decisions in life, sometimes you make bad, because Judy, my wife, was on me to start the girls program forever. I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. And it was the best thing we ever did, because now the girls program, our 22 team, I think we had 16 Division I players and I think like 38 overall in that class. So girls, we have girls and boys. We have elite teams, grades 3 through 12. But then we have Cradlers and Futures now, which mm-hmm. is crazy. That the Cradlers are the kids that are 3, 4, 5,
it's amazing.
And they just it's great. So I think that the depth that I talked about that was missing for a while, I think mm-hmm. we're going to start seeing it come back. I mean, to me, that's the biggest thing that I'm placing the emphasis on is getting younger, because we have to develop these kids. You have to expose them to the great sport of lacrosse, and then develop them and get them for a love, a thirst for the game, and then that's what will help. I mean, someone said on Twitter, I was following it, if some baseball players saw this game, they would be, how do you not fall in love with lacrosse?
That was me.
Was that you?
That was me.
So it was either you or Dan Oresti. It was one of those two.
But
I was thinking, that was the Saturday games you said, right? Or did I say
I said it yesterday.
You said Sunday. Yeah, so we have a little difference of opinion, which is fine.
You said, but I was saying the intensity. Obviously the semis are better.
To me, the semis.
I got your point.
I did not watch... Yeah. I did not miss one play on the Saturday games. It was just, and I saw Duke, Virginia, and who's the other one? Notre Dame play all season long, because they're on the ACC.
Sure.
And so I couldn't get enough of it. To me, it was great. And it wasn't, it was just to me, the other thing about that game was that head-to-head hit. I mean, that was
bad.
That was terrible. I mean,
Did you see my suggestion? Blindside hit, 2 minutes unreleasable, helmet-to-helmet ejection, no matter
it
what.
It should have been ejection.
Why is that not a rule? There are so many parents that are like, my kids, I'll let them play lacrosse, but I want them to play football. And I'm like, okay, well, then they see that game and they see that play in the championship game, the most watched game of lacrosse all year. And they see that happen in the champ game. Like, that's a hard sell for me now. When I talk to that parent, again, they're going to come right up to me and be like, that guy basically got speared and almost died. You said it was safer than football. I'm like,
I know.
Well,
it should have been three ejections.
When you watched it live, I didn't see the head-to-head. But then watching the replay, man, it was head-to-head. And what I didn't like is the fact that the Kavanaugh's helmet fell off.
Yeah.
They got to buckle those helmets up. They got to do something with those helmets.
That was in our year, our preseason for the coaches meeting. That was one of the points of emphasis. And that happened. If it's not strapped and the helmet comes off, the ref might, they'll take it into account. But if it's not strapped properly, one of our players played a certain team, I'm not going to say who, in preseason, popped his helmet off, and it was a bad hit. And that's why the helmet popped off. It was secure. And the other coach said something to us on the sideline, well, he didn't have it on right, and that was not the right thing to say. It didn't go down well. And I say the blindside hit thing, and I added that in there because in the JV tournament, I'm coaching my kids in the JV tournament.
Was that Pinkerton?
Nope. It was at Kingswood.
Oh, Kingswood runs.
Well. So we're at Kingswood, and I had a player. He's a junior, but he's not big, and he picked up the ball. He was on the sideline, and a guy lined him up from that and just ran full speed, and he turned and was like looking at me because we had a guy coming out of the box, and he got totally blindsided from the side and got a minute. And I got in trouble because I yelled. I'm like, what are you doing? The ref threw the flag, and it was only a minute, and I was furious because, like, that hit is not penalized extra no matter what.
They'll make a change to the rule.
It has to happen.
They'll make a change.
I mean, Notre Dame's man up was number one. Coach Woj, you got to be happy for Coach Woj. Yeah. I mean, his man up was number one in the country, but they didn't score. I mean,
it's tough. Like, what's the way? It's the risk reward of it all.
Yeah,
right?
That wasn't enough. Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're going into your first round game. Who are you playing?
We play Concord on Saturday, 2:00 at Stellus, and then the other side of the bracket then would be the winner of Bedford, Merrimack at Bedford.
Okay, right. Where's Exeter?
Exeter is the two seed. So they play Dover round one.
Yep.
And then they play the winner of Pinkerton Londonderry. So Londonderry is a much improved team with Coach Wiedenfeld. But it's probably going to be, I think the chalk's going to hold. It's going to be Exeter, Pinkerton most likely, and then us, Bedford.
Yeah. No, I definitely would say that.
You get a chance, go watch him play.
Yeah, for sure. Like, listen, BG just runs waves at you, man. Like, I've watched you guys play. They run waves at you.
We got guys for days.
If you're not ready and you can't beat that ride, that press, you're in for a long day. So, you know, it's great to have you on. Great to talk BG, talk college lacrosse. Tomahawks.
That went quick.
That's how so many people come in here and they're just like, they expect it to be this like, this thing. But like, listen, it's just a conversation. And we had some really great information that we got out for parents, for prospective players looking to join club teams. I think it's super valuable. And if you're in New Hampshire and you're looking for a club team, I mean, I don't know who else you're looking at. Like, Tomahawks is kind of the gold standard right now. I have kids on Tomahawks. They all love it. So it's definitely made a huge difference in my home state, which I'm very thankful for, and it's great to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
great. Pleasure.
Thanks, Chris. See ya.
Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.